Welcome back, WNST Towson Baltimore and WNST.net. It is WNST Rock Week here, and that is the hashtag, and you can say hello or toss an email my way, nasty@WNST.net. This next interview is from sort of the end of my music tenures in 1991, February of 1991. Hall & Oates, still one of the biggest bands in the world, certainly, you know, from a hit standpoint, no one more successful, but they were starting to move from giant arenas and Capitol Center type of tours that they did in the mid-1980s to DAR Constitution Hall. They were on the road with an acoustic tour, and keep in mind, this is at the very, very beginning of MTV Unplugged, and acoustic became all the rage right around 1991. So there was no internet, there was no way to know about set list or background band members' names if you didn't get the bio. So there's a little bit of Almost Famous in this, and certainly when it comes to Hall & Oates, I mean, I remember Rich Girl coming out. I had Rich Girl on one of those K-Tel albums, right, with you know, the variety of songs that would the commercial would play, and you would have to mail away $9 or whatever it was to get the album. I didn't even sell it in the stores. But Rich Girl and Sarah Smile. And then after that, I mean, obviously everything from Kiss on My List and, you know, that whole era of 80, 81, 82, 83, where they were on the radio every minute of every day. Your Kiss was on their list. All of that stuff. Christmas songs, the whole nine. An incredibly successful band unto itself. And then you consider that this interview was in February 1991. 25 years later, I just think Live from Daryl's House is one of the really incredible TV shows and one of the great storylines of my band's going to jam with your band. We're going to do it at my house. We're going to make some food. We're going to drink some wine, probably smoking funny stuff, the whole deal. But Live from Daryl's House is awesome. But this interview 25 years ago, I had a couple of flybys with Daryl Hall. I had interviewed John Oates on the Big Bam Boom Tour at the News American in 1986. I do not have a copy of that interview. I'm searching for it wherever that briefcase went. But I do have this piece from Daryl Hall. And I ran into him at 98 Rock one afternoon and inquired about interviewing him. And he gave me his PR person's name. And, you know, then I had him on the phone very, very soon after. So I do allude to that in this conversation. Again, a little starstruck, sure. A little Almost Famous, absolutely. I wound up writing a good piece. You can Google it. It's on the Baltimore Sun from February 20th of 1991 that still sits out on the web about Daryl Hall and John Oates. And, you know, again, there's a lot of fanboy, a lot of set list priming in this one, but also some good stuff. And he was a relatively good sport. And I love Daryl Hall, and I love John Oates, and I love Hall & Oates, and I still see them to this day. And never talked to Daryl Hall again. I don't think I met him at an All-Star game, maybe the 96 All-Star game. Yeah, he was on the field in Philadelphia for that All-Star game. But that's my only one and only run in with Daryl Hall other than this interview, which is a little awkward, but still fun. Here's Daryl Hall from 1991, before DAR Constitution Hall show.
Hi, Daryl.
Yeah.
Nestor from Baltimore. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Hey, I'm the guy that walked up to you in front of the radio station that day.
Oh, yeah?
Do you remember me? I told you I wanted an interview. You said, go through the right channels.
Yeah, right. Sure, I remember.
I think I found you.
Yeah, you got me.
Anyway, how's this tour coming along here? How many dates are you into it?
We're just starting. This is only the third date today.
Third date. Now, when did the whole idea for this acoustic thing come about? And you are doing acoustic?
Yeah, it happened a little bit at a time, really. We started doing some one-off things, playing acoustic guitar on some TV shows, and I did the Lennon Festival in Liverpool and the Lennon Festival in Tokyo. We played acoustic. We did the Unplugged show on MTV. I think a lot of things made us just feel like it was fun to do, and just to rearrange the songs to fit into that kind of a groove. It was, I don't know, it just was interesting to us.
Is it easier?
Well, it's not easier. I don't know what the word is.
Do you have a backing band? Do you have percussion at all?
Yeah. We have a full band, except everybody's playing acoustic instruments. We have a violinist and a cellist. Charlie Deschamps playing saxophone. We got a drum, two grand pianos. So it's a big sound. It's just all acoustic.
Okay, so this is not any
acoustic guitars.
Not any easier to put it on the road is what I'm saying, because I mean, last time you came was a very big production with lots of lights and rigging and
the lights and rigging are a little bit different. We have a more elaborate kind of a theatrical kind of a stage set. So there's a lot of scrims. backdrops and things like that. It's very, like I said, very theatrical kind of a thing.
So this isn't nearly as stripped down as one might think. I mean, the idea of Hall & Oates doing an acoustic show, to me and to some other friends I've talked to who are fans of yours, think that they're going to go and just see Daryl and John on stage with two guitars.
Not that. But it is very intimate. You know, we do some things with just us playing guitars, and then we do some things with, more band members playing. But, maybe it's three guitars or four guitars or something like that, you know.
So what do you think is the nationwide fascination with these unplugged shows? Is it MTV pretty much starting this, or?
No, I think it's in the air that people want to hear songs again. I think that it's an antidote. I mean, there's a lot of, with rap and everything that's going on, the obvious alternatives to that are songs and melodies. And the best way to hear a melody in a song is to hear it in a natural state, in a pure state. And
well, there's literally no production value at all to an acoustic song, right? It's just
right. You play the song, you play the chords, and you sing it. And it is a minimal enhancement. And I think that's what the nice part of this is. I mean, you take our songs and you play them that way. You really different things come out on it. The words come out, the melodies come out. You hear different sides of the song.
Well, was there a time when you thought differently? I mean, Big Bam Boom certainly was not lacking for production.
Oh no, that's just another way of putting music together. The 80s, a lot of things happened in technology that allowed new sounds to come out, and it was very a very stimulating time for trying new things out and using technology in new ways. I still like this kind of music. I just right now I feel that it's time for to bring the more pure side of things out.
Okay, well, is there anything in your catalog that you're going to have trouble bringing across in this live show? I mean, are there songs you just can't do because of the format?
Well, not really, because we tried a lot of different things and we weren't sure certain ones, and they all work. We do No Can Do. And you wouldn't think that would work, but it sounds like, it sounds like...
Like adult education, for instance.
Well, adult education, you could just play on a guitar if you wanted to. We're not singing that song, but you can do it. Because we did go over the song.
Well, I guess, you tried everything, right?
Yeah.
Are there just certain songs that you have that are older you just don't like anymore? Is that one of them? Or?
There's certain songs that I think fit into this whole idea better than other ones. And, there's certain ones that I'd rather not be playing right now. And certain ones that we bring out that we haven't played in years or maybe even never played that we're playing. So it's
the odd songs you never hear on the radio, is that the kind of thing?
Yeah, well, we're doing, John and I just sit down occasionally and play Las Vegas Turnaround on the show. I mean, that's a song we never played live, ever. So, things like that.
Now, does this show give you a little more freedom when you're up on stage to pick and choose what you want to do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're still in the beginning of the tour, so we're sticking to a fairly the same songs. But we're going to start adding and subtracting all the time because we have so many songs to do. It'll start being very flexible.
Now, do you throw in any weird kind of covery things? Or?
No, we're not doing any covers.
I mean, if you and John just sat down with guitars, I mean, how many songs do you have the capacity to play?
Well, I mean...
Hundreds?
We got between just some songs, we have 200 songs there, 200 plus. And any other songs we happen to know, as long as we had a lyric sheet. I can't remember lyrics for shit, but I think we got a fairly large repertoire.
Okay. Well, anyway, I just want to prepare my readers for the best and the worst here. So with Change of Season now, when do you guys, first off, get back together and decide that, hey, let's make an album? And
Well, we've been kind of working. We did Ouyeah, and that was kind of getting together, and then we stayed with that put us back on the road. And we had this great band, and we said, why don't we make a record that we just use the band in its best way, and just have some guys playing together and make a record that sounds like that. So that's really where the idea for Change of Season came from, and then we just let the album make itself.
Now, were you disappointed with Ouyeah?
No, I wasn't disappointed. I think that certain things in the production, since we didn't have a band when we were making the record, there was a lot of times when I wished that there were real people that I had more of a close musical communication with that I could use instead of using so many machines, because I would rather have done Ouyeah more like the album we just did. But that's
so who was the situation with your band members at that point? I mean, what is G's situation? I mean, are you guys pretty much divorced from each other? Or?
With who?
G. Smith.
Oh, well, G, no. I mean, G, he's not working with us. He has his own stuff. He works with Dylan. He works with SNL. And, you know, we're friends and all that. It was in 85, it was time to stop that and do something different. And now we have portions of that. I mean, T-Bone's back in the band, but he's playing guitar.
Right.
And Charlie's Chance around, and they're the only two members from the past.
So, you know, when you put these songs together, I mean, did you write them kind of as you went along, or were some of the songs already in the can before you and John got together?
They weren't in the can, but I was writing them as I went along.
It seems like such a reflective kind of, lyrically, so much, I mean, it's certainly not Kiss on Your List, you know, Kiss on My List kind of stuff.
Right.
It's not, it's a little deeper than that. I mean, did you aim for that, or just the way it came out?
It's more personal. Song on Kiss on My List, I didn't really write, you know, Jana Allen wrote that song. You know, it was more, we had a different idea in mind. This isn't a pop record.
Right. Well, when you're doing something like Starting All Over Again, I mean, to me that song seems very, very personal. And
yeah. Well, it
seems like something you'd sit down and write when you're depressed and, you know.
Well, write that song either. That's an old R&B song that was done by Mel and Tim in the early 70s.
I didn't even check the lyric sheet, actually, but I thought you wrote most of this stuff, though, right?
Yeah, most of it. That song I didn't write, and a couple other ones I wrote with other people. But
it certainly fit into the, you know.
That's the thing, that lyrically and musically, the songs that fit together the best are the ones that are on there. And there is a certain theme that's going on. It has to do with change, and the way people deal with change personally, and the way the world deals with change. And that's really the concept behind the album.
You know, you said about getting the same group of players together. I mean, you have all these celebrities playing on So Close, and you got Doug Stegmaier playing on Give It Up. And, and how did this all come about, too?
Well, we did most of the records, about 80% of the record in our studio with our band. And then we decided that we wanted to be a little more objective. So we went outside of that, and I went to California, and that's where all those people you call celebrities or whatever, they were all on one or two sessions.
But they're celebrities because they are session people.
I mean, they're well known, but they're LA people. You know, they're guys that work on a lot of records, and they were available. And I happen to know everybody that was on that record, but so I called my friends. But they're people that play on a lot of people's records, so you know their names.
Yeah, like a guy like Danny Corchmore. I don't know if he's ever made his own album, but I mean, he pops up on everybody's album. So
I've known Danny since the '70s, so that's why I called him up in the first place.
All right. Now, I mean, looking back over the past 6 or 7 years, I mean, you've gone from basically being almost a stadium act to playing small kind of places. Do you kind of feel bad that you stopped after Big Bam Boom for a little while and did the solo thing? Or?
No, that was very necessary. It was all part of getting to where we are now and going to the next place. We judge our success by our creative success, our musical success. Commercial success is something you can't depend on, and you can't work towards so much. I mean, we do fine. You know, we're all right, and we've done fine, and we've made a mark, and we're continuing to do it. I want to go beyond my next hit single. I'm not really interested in living my life based around that. You know, I care about music too much for that.
Yeah, well, I remember when I was back in like junior high and high school, you guys were touring around, and my friend was going to see you one time, and you know, said, "Oh, Hall & Oates, they have a few hits." He says they have too many hits, and it's sort of, I mean, you almost feel that way that you don't need another hit ever again.
Well, you always need one because you need people to be aware of you. But there's hits, and then there's hits. You know, there's different kinds. There's kinds of songs that actually mean something to people, and that stand the test of time and go beyond just what's on what's on the radio this week or something, you know.
Is So Close one of those songs?
Yeah, I think it is. It seems to be perceived that way, and it's a song that's it's got a lot of meaning to it. It's very personal, and we'll see if it's you know, it's whether it's a classic or not. We'll see in 10 years.
Or were you a little disappointed it wasn't a number one hit and didn't blow out?
Well,
you know,
it wasn't really made to be that. I mean, it got me where I wanted to be, if that makes any sense.
You know? Well, I just had some questions about that song in particular, just the lyrics at the end of the refrain about the "I don't want to be wise, I just want to stay young." Is that out of your head, or where did you?
Well, I wrote that about my girlfriend. You know, that's kind of a joke because she loves the sun, and she says things like that. You know, and it's just a way of. to me, that's
you go through and you hear these songs so many times on the radio, and you know all the words, and you never really figure out what they mean. And I figure when Daryl Hall sat down to write this song, there's a reason he put that in. And it's just such a profound kind of an understated kind of thing to say. But
yeah, well,
it's sort of like, I hope I die before I get old, you know.
There you go.
Well, anyway, I think I'm through with you, and I really appreciate you talking to me from your little car phone. And
okay.
I'm very appreciative. We had a good connection, at least.
Yeah, cutting out, yeah.
These are very rare.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I hope to see you next week, and look forward to seeing you put on a good show.
Okay, man.
Thanks, Daryl.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.